Okay, good afternoon. Are you there?
I am here.
Okay, we're on the line with Professor Ray Kramer, interviewing him for the Outstanding Bandmaster interview for the Phi Beta Mu International website. And Professor Kramer was our Outstanding Bandmaster in 1988, and we just started to do these recordings, Professor Kramer, just about a year ago. So we have finally reached you, and we're so excited to hear about your career. So let's start out by asking you, how did you get started in band when you were little, and like maybe your beginning director, your high school directors, or other influential directors in your early career?
Well, thank you, first of all, for the opportunity to share a little bit this afternoon. And I've been blessed with a really wonderful career that the Lord has definitely blessed me with some great teachers and some great students over the years. And certainly Phi Beta Mu has been a wonderful organization for me, and I'm still very active. Whenever we have a state convention, I always attend all the meetings, and even when I guest conduct and I'm out somewhere and they have a Phi Beta Mu meeting, I go to those meetings. So I just want you to know that this has been very important to me over the years.
Wonderful.
As I got started, I went to a two-room elementary school in DeLong, Illinois. And somewhere along in my sixth grade year, somebody visited our school, and I started trombone. And by the end of my sixth grade year, before going into junior high, I had sort of in my mind decided that I wasn't going to continue because I just didn't feel like I was progressing, I wasn't having any fun, and I was taking play time away from all my friends. And lo and behold, one afternoon there was a knock on our front door, and a gentleman introduced himself as the new band director in our district and asked me how come I hadn't signed up for junior high band.
Wonderful.
To this day, I don't know how he got my name. I guess he looked at some list, whatever, but he said, "Do you still have your trombone?" And I said, "Yes," and he proceeded to get his trombone out of the car and gave me a one-hour lesson right on our front porch. And he was terrific, amazing teacher, an amazing musician and player. His name was Don Zimmerman. He was a graduate of the University of Illinois, and he just took me under his wing. He gave me private lessons, and my experience in band from my 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th grade year was amazing. What he did for that band program and for me personally, I forever have been thankful and mentioned his name every time. He was the motivational, inspirational teacher we all want to be, and he definitely was. And then my last couple of years in high school, I had a new teacher who was also a great teacher. His name was Charlie Knapp, and he stayed in that same job. He never left. He came to my high school, and he stayed until he retired just a few years ago. And he was also a great teacher. So those two early directors just really had an important direction in my life. Yeah, and I was able to see Don Zimmerman just a few years ago to express to him how much I appreciated what he did for me in my early years. And he just passed away a few months ago, actually. And lo and behold, he said, "I've been watching your career all the way through your career, even though we haven't had any contact," which I thought was amazing.
Very nice. And to be able to have one director your whole high school career.
Yeah, actually two, because I had him for my first 2 years of high school, and then the other director the last 2 years. So but both were just great teachers, and I remained close to the last one, you know, all through my career, because I would see him every year at the Midwest Clinic. He went every single year.
Wonderful.
And so I'd see my last high school director every year at the Midwest Clinic.
So they obviously influenced you to major in music when you decided to go to college.
You know, when I decided to go to college, I thought I had my plans all set. I had been accepted to the University of Illinois. I had been accepted to Western Illinois University. My parents did not have much money. They didn't have any money. So it was pretty much up to me to pay my own way through school. And I had a scholarship for all tuition covered at Western Illinois University. So that's where I ended up going, and as it turned out, that was a great choice for me to go to Western, because I had great teachers, I had great individual instruction, I had a wonderful college band director who had just was a graduate, recent graduate of the University of Iowa. His name was Forrest Sycott, And he, again, was a great inspiration to me, not only as a musician and wanting to be a future band director, but he also got me very interested in composition. And that has always been a passion of mine all through my career.
Very interesting. And so you graduated from Western Illinois.
That was my undergraduate degree from Western Illinois. And I taught for 1 year in Illinois while I was finishing up my undergraduate degree. And then at the, you know, inspiration of my college director, Forrest Sycott, and I had recently heard the University of Iowa band perform in Iowa, and that was under the leadership of Frederick C. Ebbs. And I had pretty much decided, I applied for a composition entrance at Iowa and was accepted in composition and got a full fellowship. But as it turned out, performance and music education overrode my desire to be a composer, and I also found out I had no talent. Anyway, so, but I always knew I wanted to teach anyway, so that was, I did graduate work at the University of Iowa, and that was my next great mentor, Frederick C. Ebbs, because he was just a terrific conductor, musician, knew how to put things together as far as the band is concerned. I loved the sound he was able to get out of the band. And so I kept in close contact with him even after I graduated from Iowa, because I taught in Iowa high school for 5 years, 2 years in West Liberty, Iowa, and then 3 years in Harlan, Iowa. And he was always a regular in my, he'd come to my band room at least once or twice a year and clinic my groups and rehearse the group. And so we remained very close through all those years. And then he was the person who got me interested in applying for a job just outside of Cleveland. And so I got the job at Parma Senior High School. And that job was amazing to me because I had heard that band perform at the Midwest Clinic the year before I got the job.
Wow.
And I had 180 students in the high school program. The enrollment of the school was 3,600 students in three grades, sophomore, junior, senior. And out of the 180 students I had in two 90-piece bands, and probably 120 to 130 of those students all studied privately with professional musicians in the Cleveland area, including the major universities and members of the Cleveland Orchestra. So that was quite an ensemble, and I enjoyed that group so much and would have stayed there. But I always had a desire. I wanted to teach in college, and so the assistant job opened up at Indiana University, and it just so happened that Fred Ebbs had moved from the University of Iowa to Indiana University, and he called me and wanted to know if I would be interested in applying for the assistant job. And I said, of course.
Great connection.
Lo and behold, I was able to get that job. And I moved there in the fall of 1969, thinking that I would be there a few years and then move on to my own director of bands job. But, you know, it was such a fantastic situation with great teachers and great students. I just kept staying and later became director of bands and served in that capacity the last 24 years that I was there, out of the 36 years that I spent at Indiana University.
Wow. Well, backing up just a little bit, before you got to Indiana, the high school that that you, quote, inherited right off of Midwest, what an incredible job to walk into, and what pressure you must have felt.
I did feel a lot of pressure because that band had been the Ohio Band of the Year for 12 years in a row. They had performed at what used to be the Mid-East Clinic when it was going, and then they performed at the Midwest Clinic. And, I mean, it was an outstanding program. And to go into that program and say, okay, I'm going to see if I can take it to the next level up was a little bit of a challenge. But, you know, the students were just great to work with, and I think we had a fantastic year. It turned out to be a great year.
And those,
like I say, I would have been happy to stay there. I really would have, except for the Indiana job.
Now, in that job or any of the other jobs in your high school teaching career, did you have an assistant? Had they started hiring assistants yet?
I had an assistant when I was teaching at Harlan, Iowa. This was, a pretty rural program in southwest Iowa. And the school had really grown a lot in my first year there, and the program had grown a lot, and I convinced the administration that we needed to have two directors. So I was able to hire an assistant in my second year, and we shared the elementary. He did the junior high. We shared the elementary, and I did the high school. And when I left there to go to Parma, his name was Lee Nelson. He stayed there the rest of the time as the high school director until he retired. And he never received anything but a one rating, both marching and concert band, all the years that he taught there.
Wow.
So we sort of started something pretty good in Harlan, Iowa.
Really did. So at Indiana, you had some wonderful years there and continued the work of Ebbs and even got Bobby Knight involved, I understand.
Yeah, that was, I did the pep band for, 69, almost to 1982. And so, of course, all those years with Bob Knight, we were good friends, and he was all very appreciative of the pep band that we had. And, the rumor was that we were the sixth person on the team through our support. And later on, when I was doing one of the orchestras at IU, I asked Bob Knight to be the narrator for Lincoln Portrait of Copeland. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he was a great historian and loved Abraham Lincoln, and he jumped at the chance. And so we had a great concert with one of the orchestras that I was conducting, and it was actually the first live stream performance that the university did in the School of Music.
Wow. He came to Texas Tech, and we became friends and have done some golf outings. And he talks about that. He talks about that moment that he had and speaks very highly of you. So
at the end of the concert, he stuck around after the concert backstage, and he signed, I think, every program for every kid in the orchestra. And he stayed for at least 45 minutes doing that, which I thought was amazing. And then as we're both leaving to go home after the concert that night, he gave me a slap on the back and he said, "Okay, now when can we do Casey at bat?"
Very good.
So he was really into it. He was very much into it.
So,
Indiana University experience, I mean, gosh, when I think of the faculty members that were my colleagues and the students that went through a program that are now professional musicians and leading orchestras and leading college positions, it was just an amazing experience.
So what would you say to young directors just getting out, how the importance of teaching in the public schools before going to apply for a university job?
Well, I think it's very important, and one of the things that bothers me today is that there are so many young directors that are going through master's and doctorates and getting conducting degrees without any public school experience, and I think that kind of creates a problem for them in a number of regards. Number one, I'm not sure that they really have grasped the importance of dealing with let's say, colleagues on the faculty at a university level in a school of music, maybe not even have an expectation of what is there for the students. I just think that there needs to be some experience, some public school experience before they hit the college level. And our doctoral program that we set up at Indiana, I mean, we require that for the master's and the doctorate, that they have at least 3 years of experience. And for the doctorate, we expect even maybe 5 or 6 years experience before they go for their doctorate.
That's a great requirement. That's wonderful. So that's a current trend, though, in the rest of the country you see quite often. But you
spoke I know.
So are there any other changes you've seen through the years, either positive or negative?
Well, yeah, and before we get to that, I want to go back to one of the questions you have here, or maybe that's coming up, I can't remember, but you asked a question about who were some of the other people that were that's later on. You talk about old masters, so let me go back and answer your question. I'm sorry.
Okay, no problem.
The changes over the years I've seen are a couple of things. I think overall the total enrollment of the students participating in band programs, and I should say strictly instrumental programs around the country, has declined. There are several reasons for that. I think students have to get jobs. I think there are many more opportunities for both the boys and the girls to have extracurricular activities and athletics and other club activities that are competing against their time for instrumental music. I think that has had an impact. Saying all of that, I will say, though, that there are still great programs throughout the country, so that is there a lessening of ability or a lessening of the quality of the programs? I don't think so. I think some of the programs are as fine as what they've been for years. There just might be fewer of them than what there was. And the thing, particularly in Iowa, when I was teaching in Iowa, every little town, you know, whether it was a Class C school or a Class B school or a Class A, we only had Class A when I was there, but all of those little schools had really solid, good band programs. And, of course, now many of those smaller schools have all consolidated into larger programs. So, again, that has cut down on the number of people participating. And I don't think that's just true to Iowa. I think that has happened in many states around the country.
But Title IX put a dent in music ed, instrumental music with the addition of women's sports.
That's exactly right. And that's one of the things I alluded to when I mentioned the number of activities that were available to both women and men. And I think that Title IX did have an impact on that, which is fine, which is great. I think it gives a lot more opportunity for everybody to be able to do different things.
Right.
But I
and
do think that we still
suffered.
Have great, yeah, and we do have great programs all around the country. But the other thing that I wish is I listen to groups perform today, and I'm talking again at the high school level, but even somewhat at the university level, is that I wish there was a little more stress on the kinds of sounds that I hear coming out of some of the younger ensembles and even some of the college ensembles. It seems to me that there is such an emphasis on volume and playing extremely loud. And when that happens, you don't always get the best sounds that you can get out of the ensemble. But I think much of our literature is also contributing to that, what the composers are asking the directors to do and to play. And the expansion and the use of percussion. So when you add the expanded percussion sections and the demand that there is, and add the volume that comes out of the brass, I just think that you're getting different kinds of sounds out of the ensemble today than what you heard back in the, let's say, the 60s to the 70s to 1980.
Yes, I agree. And in judging, I do the same. I have similar feelings and discoveries that loud is contagious, overplaying is contagious, and that starts from the back of the group, from the percussion. Everybody has to play loud to defend their honor.
Well, and I have to admit that I sometimes feel sorry for the woodwinds, because you know you can't have, you know, six or seven or eight trumpets and four or five or six woodwind clarinet players and expect to have any kind of a balance unless you have places where the percussion and the brass are not playing at all, or they're playing very soft and woodwinds can play. I just think that the instrumentation that I see in a lot of the, quote, what they call wind ensembles today, does not play fairly to the woodwinds in trying to maintain a balance, particularly when you get to a forte level or above.
What was your instrumentation at Indiana?
My instrumentation was we pretty much ran 56 players every semester. That's how it ended up my last many years. When I first took over the band, it was still a large symphonic band. We ran about 82 players. But in about the mid-80s to the end of 80s, 88, 89 in there, we went to a 56-piece group. But I still maintained, you know, a better balance in the brass to woodwinds. I maintained that we kept at least 9 clarinets or maybe 10, plus a couple of bass clarinets, contrabass clarinet, 5 saxophones, 5 flutes and a piccolo, 2 or 3 bassoons, and only never more than five or six trumpets, and they didn't always play all the time, and only four trombones, two tubas, two euphoniums. Mm-hmm. So, and then a complement of percussion. Always took about six percussion. It takes that many to play most of the literature today.
Right.
But that was the basic instrumentation.
Well, that's a good ratio, I believe. Very nice. So, some personal highlights in your career, and I know Indiana was certainly one, but other highlights that you might think of, awards or whatever, and we have those awards listed in your bio. But highlights.
I don't know whether you have a current bio or not. I could certainly send you one. again, I've had so many highlights that it's hard for me to pick out one, but certainly we played many conventions, national conventions at Indiana. We played the Midwest Clinic in 2003, which was a fantastic highlight because it was standing room only. People were actually sitting on the floor in front of the front row all the way up to the stage. It's a good thing the fire marshal didn't walk in the place at that time. And of course, I've been teaching at a university in Japan for 25 years, and I still conduct over there 3 months a year, at least 3 months a year, sometimes 6 months, two semesters. And we've had two performances at the Midwest Clinic and are considering another performance coming up in the next few years if we, you know, obviously putting in an application.
Which group
is that? That's been a great highlight for me over there, too. And we always play, we always do one tour a year. We go to all parts of the country. We have done, not each time, but we've been to all parts of Japan. And we always do a major concert at one of the fantastic concert halls in the city of Tokyo every semester. So that has been a great highlight to me. It's been like just a fantastic extension of my Indiana career.
Which, is that a school or a professional group in Tokyo?
I've conducted professional groups over there, but this is a university. This is a conservatory. It's called the Musashino Academy of Music.
Yes.
And at one point, they had the largest number, the highest number of music majors in the country. They had almost 4,000 majors.
Wow.
Every university has declined just because of population and economy, but it's still one of the largest schools of music in Japan. They're still running between 2,600 and 3,000 music majors. I conduct the top wind ensemble. They have two major orchestras, and I think just at the junior-senior level, we have the wind ensemble, and then there must be at least three or four bands underneath that group.
My goodness. Well, we look forward to
they're very talented. Yeah, we hope to be there in a couple of years if we can work it out.
Well, that's a wonderful thing to do in your retirement, for sure.
Yeah. My wife is convinced that I'm not retired yet, and Tim Lotzenizer has a word for me. He says, Kramer, you're not retired, you're retreaded.
Yes. Over all those years and even currently, do you have a favorite composition or favorites?
Well, I like to talk about composers, but I am a huge Granger fan. Almost anything that Granger wrote, I love, and especially Lincolnshire Poesy. But I've also become involved in lots of the current trends of composers today, and I have some of my favorites that I really do like, and one of the ones that people may not know about, because he's not a self-promoter, but his name is Kevin Walzik. And Kevin teaches at Western Oregon University and is a terrific composer, has written some wonderful things. He's won some major awards, been nominated for Pulitzer and Grammys. He is a winner of the NBA composition contest and has been runner-up two or three times. So I'm very much a fan of his writing, along with a lot of other very fine young composers as well. But
and how do you spell his last name? Excuse me.
Yeah, Walczyk.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And I think he's a composer that band directors need to get to. And he writes for every level. He has some wonderful grade three pieces he's written, as well as some highly advanced works for major universities.
Well, I'm sure that he will get some searching after hearing his name and your recommendation.
I think he should. I think he's very strong. Of course, there's many other very fine ones, but I don't need to go with those. Many of the directors already know of all the many of the current composers that are writing today. But I just, this is a name that I think should be in front of directors. They need to know his works. They really do.
Well, we appreciate that. Can you, you were thinking a moment ago about some of the old masters. Of course, now you are considered an old master. But during
I'm not sure I like that term.
A retreaded old master.
There you go, retreaded old master. Well, I was fortunate. When I was growing up through high school and even my college career and early teaching career to have some wonderful mentors and people that I considered great friends and who I learned a lot from. As I mentioned before, Fred Ebbs, who was the conductor of the Hobart High School band that went to the last national contest and won the national contest. And that's also a school that Ravelli was at and won two national contests at Hobart, Indiana. And so Bill Ravelli was always a person I looked up to, what he did, how the kind of group he performed. John Painter at Northwestern University. I played under Mark Hinesley a couple, three times at the University of Illinois. And he conducted my Indiana band at an ABA convention. Ray Dvorak heard me play a couple of times when I was a trombonist in high school level. He judged me at state contests. As far as high school directors, you know, gosh, McAllister at Joliet Central High School was an icon at a high school level. And even at the elementary level, Charles Peters, who I heard that band play at the Midwest Clinic at least on two different occasions. His elementary band is just phenomenal. I kept thinking, I just can't believe that these young kids can do what they're doing. So I was fortunate to have some really strong, Harry Beegent would be another one. We developed a very strong relationship with Harry. Even though I never studied with him, I knew his works. As a matter of fact, my very first year to attend the Midwest Clinic, his Cass Tech High School band performed. And I kept thinking, oh my gosh, if this is what's possible for the young people to play, then this is what I have to aspire to. And then over the years, we became very close friends. And I always appreciated the musicianship, the kind of work that Harry did and was able to get out of young musicians. It was just fantastic. So I had lots of really strong mentors that I followed and followed their careers and wanted to emulate. In fact, I always told John Painter, I said, John, you were the inspiration for me wanting to get a college job at a young age because, you know, the reputation, John got the Northwestern director of bands job directly from being a graduate assistant, and he went directly to director of bands at age 28 at Northwestern University. So I kept, when my wife and I were married, I said, okay, my goal is I want to be a college band director by the time I'm 28. And lo and behold, I got the Indiana job when I was 28. I wasn't director of bands, but I thought, okay, I did it. Now, I did turn 29 like 6 weeks after I got the job, but still, I got the job at 28.
Unbelievable. So through your career, you mentioned those key figures. What about anything specifically that helped you, other than people, what helped you most in your early career and throughout your career?
Well, you know, I have always been an unbelievably strong supporter of the Midwest Clinic. I never missed the Midwest Clinic. My wife likes to tell the story that we got married in December of 1963. I had already been attending the clinic two or three years prior to that, and she wanted to get married before Christmas. And I said, you know, I can't do that because I can't miss the Midwest Clinic, so we'll have to get married after Christmas. So we got married on December 28th after the clinic was over. And for our honeymoon, I said, I want to show you where we go to the Midwest Clinic, and there was a great eating place right next to the hotel. And called the Ham and Egger, and the hotel was the Sherman House. I don't remember that or not, but so we went for one night and stayed in the Sherman House and ate breakfast in the Ham and Egger, and then we drove back to Iowa to get back in time to start school.
Well, you're so correct in the conventions and the clinics that are at Midwest and our state conventions. So young directors really need to attend. That's where you learn and develop ideas and hear what's out there, you know.
I always told my students when I was at IU, I said, look, you know, it's so important that you attend professional activities because it's there that we learn. And from 1960 until this, I think in all my time, you know, I have only missed three Midwest clinics since 1960. And two of those is when I was teaching in at Musashino, getting the group ready to come over. And the other time I was getting an honorary doctorate at Western Illinois University, and I missed some of the clinic. I had to leave 2 days early. But I felt like that I learned so much by being elbow to elbow with the people who were the leaders in our profession and learning from them. And I still feel that way. I didn't realize that I would ever be involved, but, you know, I got this call from Barbara Buhlman in 1990 saying, you know, we'd like to have you join the board. And so I joined the board and was on the board for 20 years and served 13 years as president, stepping off the board and presidency in 2009. And I told the board, I said, look, I've already served 5 years longer than what we allow a U.S. president to serve. So I said, it's time for me to go.
Well, you did wonderful work during those years. And the effect.
We expanded the numbers huge from 1990 until 2009. And, you know, we increased huge numbers, you know. We almost were at 18,000 in 2009, and that was the first year, 2008, we were almost at 18,000, and then we moved to 2009, we moved into the new facility at McCormick's Place West. We knew we had to because we were just totally out of space at the Conrad Hilton. People were getting upset they couldn't get into clinics, they couldn't get into concerts. So we knew we had to move so that there was going to be continued expansion. That was the only way to go. So
yes.
After the first year, 2009, that's when I decided that that's it. I've had my time. It's time for other people to take over and do the thing, and they have.
It was a necessary move. It's you still miss the quaintness of the old Hilton, but everybody knows it was necessary.
Yep, I understand that totally, and I agree with all those comments, but I think people appreciate everything under one roof.
Yeah.
And not having to go out in the bad weather to get to the Congress Hotel or one of the other venues where we had to go to, and everybody can get into any clinic or concert they want to anymore.
Absolutely. So in closing, what would you want to tell the young directors just beginning their career? I know you've mentioned going to conventions. Anything else you would like to add to that in closing our interview?
I think that the thing that I'd like to just say to the young directors is this, that once you establish a goal of what you really want to do, you know, work hard. I mean, it takes work ethic. We all know that. It takes time to build, but the important thing is you can't force a program to go where it needs to go from behind. You have to lead the program there. And that means you have to be patient, make sure that you build properly, that you don't do something in a year or two and then have it all fall apart, but you have to be patient and you have to consider the students. You have to take the students where they are and lead them to the next level. You can't blame the students for where they are. Okay, take them where they are and then take them to the next point and just keep building on year on year. I always tell people you build your programs one student at a time. And every student has to feel like they are important and they're contributing to the overall impact of the whole program. And if you can do that, you'll be successful. But to continue to learn and be patient and have a goal and be willing to work in a way that is going to get you that goal, making sure that you maintain a connection with your family. If you're married and you have a family, you can't lose connection with your family. The family has to be a key core ingredient to the success of your life and in building your program. I believe that firmly. And I've seen too many marriages fail because the program or their work became more important than what the family was.
Mm-hmm. Great advice. Thank you very, very much for your time today. And this interview will be posted on our international website. And we look forward to seeing you again at Midwest this year.
Well, thank you very much, Keith. I've had the enjoyed talking with you and sharing a little bit, and I just like to say that once again that I just feel like that the Lord has greatly blessed our lives, and just the opportunity to be involved in the profession the way I have has been a great blessing. And I encourage anybody to stay in it, because I don't think there's anything more special than working with young musicians in an instrumental program.
Absolutely. Thank you very, very much. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.